Dr. Austin, can you start by telling us what the C40 group is and what it aims to do?
So C40 is a collection of 91 of the world's largest cities, with a collective population of around 615 million people and 25% of the world's GDP. And what we aim to do is to support our cities to deliver low-carbon developments and reduce CO2 emissions at the same time as improving the prosperity, livability and health of its citizens.
How do cities become involved in the group, and is there some kind of entry requirement?
Well, we're an organisation of the megacities, the biggest cities on the planet. So we really only look at cities above 3 million people. They're our main constituency. And there's about 200 cities on the globe that meet that criteria. But we also have a small number of very small cities, but they're world leaders. So Portland, Oregon, Copenhagen, cities like that, that can show and help the biggest cities in the world how to really show their low-carbon future.
So, yes, as you say, initially the group revolved around megacities, which you're defining as cities over 3 million. But the challenges for those megacities, I would have thought, they're quite great in reducing their carbon footprint, aren't they? What are the biggest challenges for those kinds of cities?
The megacities are the ones where the largest amount of emissions occur. Population is growing very, very quickly in some of those cities, particularly in the global south. I think the big challenges are in terms of the growth of population means we need to provide housing, we need to provide jobs for those citizens. So trying to reduce urban sprawl, so we're moving towards a much more compact and connected cities, reducing emissions from buildings and developments. We need to improve the transport system, moving away from a car-based city to one that relies on walking, cycling and transit. And we need to reduce waste, you know, moving away from landfill sites to the reuse and recycling of waste materials.
I'm wondering what the situation is in the organisation in regard to governance and in who you deal with in particular cities, because I guess it's a little bit different everywhere, but say in Australia we have large cities, and those cities are divided up into council areas, and each council has its own government. And so you're dealing directly with mayors, but often they might be the mayor of really just a metropolitan area. And as you just mentioned, a lot of the problem is occurring in the suburban areas with suburban sprawl and all the transport problems and so on. So how do we deal then, and at what level do we deal with that kind of challenge of suburban sprawl and how people live and how people expend their energy?
So our principal point of contact would always be one mayor in a city. It's very difficult for us to link up with 32 mayors in each city when we have 91 cities. But it's fundamental that the planning of a city has to be done on the metropolitan area. We've been talking to the organisation in Melbourne, in Sydney and other cities around the globe about how we can support them to develop a metropolitan-wide plan with the objective of having zero carbon by 2050, and that will involve working together with everybody, and not just the 32 metropolitan authorities, but also the state and other key players, because ultimately we can only succeed if we all work together.
And so what are the benefits for cities in becoming a member of this organisation?
The principal way C40 works is through peer-to-peer exchange. We often say that the best experience, the best expertise in the world on the particular urban issues are the city officials that are working on those. So if you bring together, as we have done in Melbourne this week, 25 cities of the real experts, they share their problems, they give their solutions, and the idea being that a city that's embarking on a new project will have the best advice available, and therefore they can deliver projects more quickly, more efficiently and cheaply. And that's been successful. For example, since 2009, support through C40 cities has meant that the number of cycling hire schemes has increased from 6 to 43. The number of schemes relating to district energy has increased from 3 to 21 cities. And the number of green tech, clean tech hubs and clusters has increased from 3 to 23.
One of the main methods by which you're supporting cities through the C40 is by knowledge exchange, I think is what you're saying, and by sharing, experiences. But what about actually funding these changes? Do you get involved in that at all? Because I guess some of these cities in your membership not wealthy.
We've identified through research work that we undertook last year that financing is probably the number one barrier to delivery on the ground. And the financing difficulties in the developed world are very different to those in the developing world. And there's great projects in cities, great technical projects, and there's actually a lot of money out there. But there's a gap between the two. So we are supporting our cities with technical assistance to help them develop investment-ready proposals, taking the good schemes to investment-ready so that they then can go to the financing market, whether it's investment banks or certainly in the case of the developing world, to international development banks. And we've got quite a lot of success there. We're working now in Mexico City. We're working in Bogota. We're working in Bangalore to help them deliver that. And this is just the start of the process. In the developed world, though, we are bringing together the city officials responsible for the specific technical work with their chief financial officers so they can work together to try to find innovative financing models to deliver the schemes that are needed in the city.
And how are you going about measuring outcomes? And is the measurement of those outcomes based on a common sort of scale that you can apply across the whole world?
Ultimately, we're a climate change organisation. So for us, the outcome is a reduction in greenhouse gas emissions. We have a standard methodology to calculate greenhouse gas emissions, which is something called the Global Protocol. And that is every one of our cities will have that within the space of about 12 months. So they'll be able to compare London and Lagos, Melbourne and Madrid. But before that, though, we are measuring our cities in terms of the outcomes. So, for example, how are they moving towards reducing car use and increasing cycling and walking on transport? How are they electrifying their bus fleet? How are they increasing the amount of residential retrofitting, for example? How many buildings are zero carbon? So these things we can measure to show the progress of actually delivery on the ground, which ultimately would lead to reduction in emissions down the line.
Could you give an example, or possibly more than one example, of the kinds of work that you've been doing? And I know that you were involved in London. So maybe if you could give an example of London and what's being done and what has been done there and how that came about and who you had to work with in order to achieve it.
I think with every city, the mayor is far closer to the people than many other politicians. You know, in London, Ken Livingstone, the mayor of London, used to travel by tube to get to work. Boris Johnson used to cycle. So therefore, we work very closely with the people because they can wind down their window and tell the mayor what they think of him. But we have to work with other councils within London. We have to work with the public. We have to work with business to make things happen. So things like the congestion charging, for example, it was essential that we got support from all these different groups. We listened to their views and changed the scheme as required to make sure it still delivered the overall objective. But actually, we could deliver a scheme that was satisfactory to all.
We were hearing today that cities tend to grow. You know, they tend to get bigger. They tend to also grow in size as well as population. How do you confront that problem of, on the one hand, cities growing in size and population, and on the other hand, trying to reduce their carbon footprint?
I mean, in the developed world, certainly cities are more efficient from a carbon perspective than the suburbs. You don't have to drive as much. The houses or apartments tend to be smaller and more efficient. So there are better places to live from that perspective. In the developing world, though, we're expecting that probably a third of people in the developing world in their cities will be living in informal settlements. So how do you provide the services, the quality of life, the zero carbon nature of development when the governance is internal to that area, it's not run by government? And I think that's a big challenge that we have to look at. How can we make cities better in certainly cities that we don't understand in the first world?
Where do you see this organisation going in the future? Are you aiming to grow that organisation in terms of membership, or you're concentrating on achieving the outcomes?
We're not interested in becoming a really big organisation in terms of numbers. Probably 100 cities sounds about right. What we do want to do, though, is transfer the knowledge that we've gained, transfer the tools, the best practices through other organisations that exist, like ICLEI, UCLG, countrywide organisations, so they can access that information to make their cities better. So I think that's kind of the first thing. We do need to continue to support our cities on breaking down the barriers. So I think supporting our cities on financing will be a big thing going forward. I think supporting our cities on improving the governance structures and how they can work with national governments, state governments and business is going to be a vital thing. Developing coalitions to coordinate work going forward. I think the third thing that's most important is helping mayors make the case. It's very difficult to make the case just on carbon alone. So we need to explain that the projects that are being put in will lead to more jobs, will lead to improved air quality, better health, reduced inequality, things that we can show that there will be benefits now, today, in the next few years, not just long-term benefits, which is obviously the ultimate goal. So I think that is a very, very big piece of work, and we're working on that at the moment with a number of partners.